Hi there. Welcome to the From Lab to Launch podcast by Qualio, where we share inspiring stories from the people on the front lines of life sciences. Tune in and leave inspired to bring your life-saving products to the world.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to From Lab to Launch by Qualio. I'm Meg, your host. I'm glad to be here and really excited about today's episode. Before we get started, we'd love it if you rated the podcast. It's easy to do and share it with any of your science nerd friends. We know you have some. If you'd like to be on the show, please see the show notes for an application. Today, we're joined by Pam Hurley, a distinguished figure in the world of professional writing and communication training. Pam is the founder and president of Hurley Write, Inc., a firm that has carved out a niche for itself by providing top-tier writing courses tailored to the needs of businesses, technical, and scientific professionals. With a client roster that reads like a who's who of global corporations, including life science giants like Pfizer and Genentech, Pam brings a wealth of experience in enhancing the clarity, impact, and effectiveness of professional communication. Her work is about empowering professionals to convey their ideas effectively, engage their audiences, and achieve their goals with precision and confidence. For anyone in the life sciences looking to elevate their writing, whether it's for regulatory submissions, research publications, or internal communications, Pam's insights are invaluable. Her approach, focusing on clear, concise, and targeted documents and presentations, promises to leave you with strategies that will immediately improve your writing and communication skills. Given how much writing and documentation takes place in launching any regulated product, we thought Pam would be a wonderful addition to the podcast this year.
Good for you to sophomores. I'm great. That's it.
We're done. So for more Pam's work, check out the show notes, but let's go ahead and get to it, Pam. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Terrific. Can you give us some background on how you got into your writing career and running your own practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started in academia back in the day, and actually it was interesting because I was teaching in academia, and I realized that what I was teaching in academia was applicable to a lot of professionals. So I don't know if you ever listen to me on LinkedIn. I have this series called Pam's Rants, and I'm consistently ranting about the poor job that academia doesn't train people how to write for the real world. And so I called a local, it's actually a pharma company, they're still in business. I called them and I said, hey, I'm teaching this class. I think your folks could benefit from it. I called them for a solid year. They finally hired me. And when they hired me, I worked with them for about 10 years, training their existing folks and also training their onboarding their new folks to teach them the way that the company wanted them to write. So that kind of propelled us to stardom, if you want to think about that one.
Awesome. So just cold calling got your foot in the door into technical writing.
Back in the day, you could get people on the phone. I don't think it's that way anymore, but back in the day, you sure could. And so, yeah, and then from there, I just calling companies. And, you know, now we have a team of probably seven. We have a team of seven, very talented instructors. So, yeah, it's been great.
Terrific. So how can effective writing transform the life science industry?
Let me count the ways. So one of the things we find with life sciences companies is that they're oftentimes incredibly smart people. They always have incredibly smart people, but these folks don't necessarily know how to write and how to write well and how to write in such a way that the information appeals to and can be read and understood by their targeted readers. And so, especially if they come from academic backgrounds, they often tend to write in academic speak, which is not the way that they should be writing. And as you know, in life sciences, they're so documentation heavy. I mean, everything from taking notes at meetings to protocols to FDA submission. The list goes on and on and on. Deviation. We do a lot of work with companies on their deviation reports. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of time and energy wasted on poor writing. And so, you know, what we find oftentimes is that people in the life sciences write, and then there's a lot of revision and things like that, and there's a lot of feedback, and there's a lot of back and forth. And so it takes longer for, you know, products to get out the door, it takes longer for things to be approved, and massive amounts of money, right? So I'm not telling any of the life sciences folks anything that they don't already know. That's a lot. It's a lot of time, a lot of wasted time and energy on poor writing that can really be easily solved.
Do you have a specific example of how improving those writing skills has impacted a deviation process at a company?
Yeah, so we're working with a company right now, and their deviation reports are written in such a way that it's very difficult for management to understand what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to fix the issue. And so what we help them work on is getting to the point more quickly, because oftentimes with deviation reports, you know, they're written chronologically. First this happened, and then this happened. Oh, this stuff happened. And then by the end, they're like, oh, and so what we're teaching them to do is to rethink how they strategize and how they organize these kinds of reports for their particular readers. Because management, you know, what are they mainly interested in, right? And so teaching people, writers in the life sciences, to really, and we hear the thought, oh, you got my focus on your, you know, who are you writing for, who are your readers? But the problem with that is that most of the time people don't know how to do that. So I'm writing for Meg. Okay. Well, okay. You know, and then you hear, well, Meg likes bulleted. Meg likes bullets in all her documents. Okay. And so then, you know what I mean? So it's just this kind of superficial kind of thinking about who they're writing for. And everything that we teach is based on readability study. So it's not grammar, or we're going to do this because we think it sounds okay. We're going to do this because this is what we know about how readers read. And so a lot of it is these folks just don't have the tools, and I'm deviating from what your question was. But a lot of times it's not that they are poor communicators. It's that they don't have the tools. They don't. So we just kind of do this because this is what we think we should do, and this is the way we're taught in academia, instead of there are real ways to solve the writing problem.
Yeah. So it sounds like knowing your audience and that readability and understanding that readability are two common challenges. Are there other common writing challenges that professionals face in their day-to-day work?
Yes. Well, a big one is not knowing what the outcome is. Right. And so what I mean by that is they'll write without understanding. You have to know where you're going to get there. And so one of the things we talk about in our classes is reverse engineering, right? So if you start with where you're going, then you can better chart that path. But what people do is they just start writing and writing and writing. I'm going to write some more, and then I'm going to hope for the best, or they use someone else's report or something like that, without giving any real thought to what is it that I'm trying to achieve. And so that oftentimes is why it takes, you know, in your reading, it takes so long to figure out what the point is, because people just write and they just write and they write and they just, gosh, I really hope it works this time, without having any real, you know, we talk a lot about outcome statement, reverse engineering the document, know where you're going, and then you can chart a path to get there. But if you don't know where you're going, or you have a vague idea of where you're going, it's going to be much more difficult for you.
That's great advice. And I pet peeve reading something and being like, what was the point?
I think really and you're reading it like a bit, and any minute now I'm going to be able to figure it out. It's just kind of amazing. You know, it's interesting because writers most of the folks we work with hate writing. They just don't like it. I don't want to do it. But it's so interesting because they spend all this time doing what we call overwriting, right? And it's just this kind of, their words on a page and hope for the best. And then they spend all this time on the back. And where if they took a minute, take a minute to plan, they wouldn't, you know, the writing task would be so much shorter, and they would write more coaching documents right out of the sheet instead of this kind of, you know, next thing about it is, you know, the writing, the reports, whatever it is they're writing, that's the deliverable, right? That is the deliverable. It's not what you do in the lab or what you do behind the scenes. It is the document, because that's how people decide, you know, is the FDA going to approve? You know, what is the deviation? Can it be fixed? How do we fix it? You know, whatever it is that people, you know, companies are guilty of not giving writers adequate training or adequate time to write, which is very interesting because the document is the deliverable. I mean, so there's that.
It's a great point.
Thanks.
Yeah. All the time spent and not planned out well.
Yes. So. It's amazing. And companies oftentimes don't see that ROI. You know, they just know that things aren't going well. They don't know why, and they don't know how to fix it. And they don't ever look to the writers. And lots of times, I hate to say this out loud, but a lot of times it's the reviewers as well who are the bottleneck. And they're making comments that nobody understands. And yes, it's just kind of this weird kind of situation, instead of everybody being online and everybody have the same understanding of this is what we're looking for, this is what we're going to review for, right? Instead, it's a surprise. Well, today I'm going to look for, you know, it's kind of weird. It's a power thing too. I mean, it's being honest, unfortunately.
Going back to the readability studies, can you elaborate more on the concept of those studies and how it forms the foundation of your teaching methodology?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we don't teach grammar. So what we do is we look at, and so what readability studies are, obviously, are how readers read. Because if you don't know how readers read, what is the point? You're guessing, right? So I'm going to write for the engineer or the scientist in the next cube instead of understanding how readers read. So readers pay attention to sentences in a certain way, to paragraphs that are written a certain way. There's strategies in involved in the length of a paragraph, the length of a sentence. You know, people say, I actually with one client, we've been doing this for 39 years, so I've pretty much seen it all. And the client was, well, if a sentence is over three lines, it's too long. Well, that was dumb. That's just stupid. Because you can have a sentence that's five lines long and be perfectly readable. And you can have one that's one line long and not be readable. But people get caught up in these rules. What are the rules? You cannot begin a sentence with and or but, or the world is just going to explode. I mean, it's crazy stuff. So everything that we talk about is, you know, a lot of writing really is common sense. You know, but people get really wrapped up in the rules and the rules. So how you emphasize, how you write for particular readers, what type of organizational strategy you use, all that is based on readability. One of the things we know now is that people don't read. And so if people don't read, how do you appeal to those readers? Or they may gloss over, or they may skim. Right? People are much more likely to skim now than they were 5 or 10 years ago. You need to know that. You need to know that if you're writing the same way you did 5 or 10 years ago, their document may not be landing the way that it did 5 or 10 years ago. So what do you need to do, right? And so that's how readability studies can help us evolve and think about different and new ways and different strategies to appeal to our readers and get the job done. Can you tell I'm passionate about this? Can you tell
I love it. I love the passion. Many of our professionals see writing as a secondary skill. We see it on job applications, you know, have excellent written communication, but how do you help them understand the critical role it plays in their success?
Oh my goodness. Well, here's the thing, and this has been said by philosophers for years and years and years. If you can't explain it, you probably don't understand it. We also know that, and this is based on studies, that people who can communicate well are more likely to be promoted. They're more likely to be in leadership roles and things like that. People who can't communicate well. I mean, another thing to think about is this, is that people judge you based on the writing you do. And all of us have done it. All of us have looked at a document and read it and go, "Woo, not the sharpest tool in the shed." We've all done it, right? And so when we think about the document as a deliverable, that's what I'm talking about. Your image, right? The way that you are perceived is wrapped up in that document. And so it's incredible. How do you want to be perceived? You want to be perceived as somebody who doesn't know anything, disorganized because the writing's disorganized? Or do you want to, be perceived as somebody who is incredibly intelligent and thoughtful, and all those kind of things? I'm slipping out of my chair.
So excited.
So excited.
Falling out of your chair.
My chair.
Yeah. And what are some insights you have on how effective writing impacts decision-making in business and organizational settings?
Whoa. I will give you a story. So we have one white client who these are engineers, and the writing was so hard to understand that leadership was making wrong decisions, multi-million-dollar incorrect decisions based on the information that they were given, right? And then another example is the Challenger disaster. If you've read anything about the Challenger disaster, that was a communication issue. And so, you know, when you think about those things, and maybe in your business, right, your business is not that big of a deal. It won't have that much of an impact, but it could. And so, I mean, businesses really need to consider how their communication is being perceived. And I'm going to say this, a lot of new graduates don't have the same writing training that we did. I mean, I'm old. Back in the day, we had a lot more writing training. And so there's an assumption oftentimes that people who are college graduates, master's, PhDs, know how to write. And that can be a really poor assumption to make.
Yeah. And on the flip side, if they don't know how to write, how are they leveraging AI? And as those tools become more prevalent, is writing training still essential?
Absolutely. Because you still have to have, AI not got to the point where it can take the place of human beings and human thought and thing. It's interesting that we've actually just developed a class on AI. And there's three levels on how you want to use AI. Because it's only as good as what you put in, right? So it is making progress. I think it can be a good aid, but you have to know how to use it. But I don't know that it will ever replace human thought, human problem solving capabilities, and that's kind of big. And then the other thing is, you still have that people, we can review the AI written document for technical content and readability and those kinds of things. So, you know, it just, and I know people go, "Oh, anywhere, I know it's a nice new shiny thing. You're never going to have to write again." Yeah, we're not there yet.
Yeah, not till Pam teaches the AI all the readability tricks.
Yeah, not till I get in there and teach it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, our last question is more of a fun one we'd like to ask each of our guests. And since we've talked a lot about writing, it seems apropos that we would ask you about your favorite writers. So if we ran into you at a bookstore or your local library, in which section would we find you?
You'd find me in fiction. I love fiction. I love John Irving, who wrote The War According to Garp. Something very interesting about him, too, is so they say, whether this is true or not, but he starts his novels by writing the last sentence first. And then he works his way backwards. So I'm not talking about the reverse engineering, but I love John Irving. I love Joyce Carol Oates. John Boyne, another word. I love to read. I read every day. And that's another thing that research tells us, that if you read every day, you're going to be a better writer. And you should write every day. And that'll make you a better writer. Big surprise here.
Does documentation count? Does documentation count as writing? Then I think I'm all set.
Yeah, well, if you're doing it consistently, I mean, it's just, you know, the example I always use is, you know, you don't get great at anything without doing it consistently. You just don't. And so I know people hate writing and all that, but there's so many ways to, you know, to write, right? Whether it's, you know, emails or journaling or whatever the heck it is. I mean, there's a lot of ways to write, but nobody's going to, I think part of the problem too is that, you know, when you're SIDEX and you write, maybe, oh, it's just so great. It's on the refrigerator and all that. And then as you grow, you just get beat up about your writing so much that by the time people actually get into the real world, I mean, they're just like, need it. I can't do it. But because there's a lot of angst associated with it. And that's a whole nother rant of mine. But anyway, I just feel like, I'm not saying that all, you know, the teachers should go, but they always focus on the bad stuff. I mean, never focus on what writers do well, typically.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. And in the workplace, if you manage a team of people who have to write, you should focus on some of the things that they do well.
Well,
you know, instead of just beating them up about everything. So.
That's great advice. Well, thanks, Pam. This has been a great conversation. Where can people go to follow along and learn more about you?
Thank you. You can go to our website, which is HurleyWrite.com. You can hit me up on LinkedIn, Pam Hurley, or email me, Pam Hurley Wright, or give us a call, 877-249-7483.
Yeah. Thank you. And check out Pam's Rants on LinkedIn.
Pam's Rants. Yeah.
Okay.
Another one. I've got a little slack here lately, but yeah, check out my rants.
Okay. I will do that. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of From Lab to Launch, brought to you by Qualio. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and give the show a positive review. It really helps us out. For more information about Qualio, our guest today, or to be a guest on a future episode, please refer to the show notes. Until next time.